Last Enemy by H. Beam Piper. Part 1. The last enemy was the toughest of all, and conquering him was in itself almost as dangerous as not conquering. For a strange pattern of beliefs can make assassination an honorable profession. Along the U-shaped table, the subdued clatter of dinnerware and the buzz of conversation was dying out. The soft music that drifted down from the overhead sound outlets seemed louder as the competing noises diminished. The feast was drawing to a close, and Dallona of Hadron fidgeted nervously with the stem of her wineglass as last-moment doubts assailed her. The old man at whose right she sat noticed, and reached out to lay his hand on hers.
"My dear, you're worried," he said softly. "You of all people shouldn't be, you know."
"The theory isn't complete," she replied, "and I could wish for more positive verification. I'd hate to think I'd got you into this." Garnon of Roxor laughed.
"No, no," he assured her. "I decided upon this long before you announced the results of your experiments. Ask Girzon, he'll bear me out."
"That's true," the young man who sat at Garnon's left said, leaning forward. "Father has meant to take this step for a long time. He was waiting until after the election, and then he decided to do it now, to give you an opportunity to make experimental use of it." The man on Dallona's right added his voice. Like the others at the table, he was of medium stature, brown-skinned and dark-eyed, with a wide mouth, prominent cheekbones, and a short, square jaw. Unlike the others, he was armed. With a knife and pistol on his belt and on the breast of his black tunic, he wore a scarlet oval patch on which a pair of black wings with a tapering silver object between them had been superimposed.
"Yes, Lady Dallona, the Lord Garnon and I discussed this, oh, 2 years ago at the least. Really, I'm surprised that you seem to shrink from it now. Of course, you're Venus-born, and customs there may be different, but with your scientific knowledge—"
"That may be the trouble, Dirzed," Dallona told him. "A scientist gets in the way of doubting, and one doubts one's own theories most of all."
"That's the scientific attitude, I'm told," Dirzed replied, smiling.
"But somehow I cannot think of you as a scientist." His eyes traveled over her in a way that would have made most women, scientists or otherwise, blush. It gave Dallona of Hadron a feeling of pleasure. Men often looked at her that way, especially here at Darsh. Novelty had something to do with it. Her skin was considerably lighter than usual, and there was a pleasing oddness about the structure of her face. Her alleged Venusian origin was probably accepted as the explanation of that, as of so many other things. As she was about to reply, a man in dark gray, one of the upper servants who were accepted as social equals by the Acorn Neb nobles, approached the table. He nodded respectfully to Garnon of Roxor.
"I hate to seem to hurry things, sir, but the boy's ready. He's in a trance state now," he reported, pointing to the pair of visiplates at the end of the room.
Both of the 10-foot square plates were activated. One was a solid, luminous white. On the other was the image of a boy of 12 or 14, seated at a big writing machine. Even allowing for the fact that the boy was in a hypnotic trance, there was an expression of idiocy on his loose-lipped, slack-jawed face, a pervading dullness.
"One of our best sensitives," a man with a beard, several places down the table on Dallona's right, said.
"You remember him, Dallona. He produced that communication from the discarnate assassin, Sirzim. Normally, he's a low-grade imbecile, but in trance state, he's wonderful. And there can be no argument that the communications he produces originates in his own mind. He doesn't have mind enough of his own to operate that machine."
Garnon of Roxor rose to his feet, the others rising with him. He unfastened a jewel from the front of his tunic and handed it to Dallona.
"Here, my Lady Dallona, I want you to have this," he said. "It's been in the family of Roxor for 6 generations, but I know that you will appreciate and cherish it." He twisted a heavy ring from his left hand and gave it to his son. He unstrapped his wristwatch and passed